This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the show today, we'll be talking in the first half hour with Terry O'Connor, who is an artist in residence with the University of Illinois Department of Dance. And that department is presenting its annual February dance concerts this week, Thursday through Saturday. And in the later portion of the show, talking with Michael Luxner, who is music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. They're going to be giving their annual Young Artists Concert this Saturday evening at Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur. It's Live and Local. Hope you'll stay with us. An exciting piece. It's the Prelude, Fugue, and Riffs by Leonard Bernstein with clarinetist John Bruce Yeh of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. He's the acting principal this year, or at least he was pretty recently. And that was with the DePaul University Jazz Ensemble led by Robert Lark. We're going to hear them later on in the show, in fact, right at the very end of the show, because he's featured in a performance we'll hear. Of a piece that will be played on the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra concert this Saturday evening. It's their Young Artist Concert, and one of their students is doing another piece that happens to be on that recording. And that's all I'm going to give away for now, but I'll be talking with Michael Luxner, who is the music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, and we'll hear about that piece and the rest of the program on the later portion of the show. But first, on Live and Local today, my guest is Terry O'Connor, who is an artist in residence at the University of Illinois in the Department of Dance, and he's doing some of the choreography that is on the program. There's a number of pieces represented with different choreographers from the dance department, and pleased to welcome you to the show. I guess I should turn your microphone on, and there you can say
thank you.
Whatever you like.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming in. It's great to meet you. I've been hearing some wonderful things about you. Although I guess I didn't know that you were on campus. I haven't kept great tabs on the dance department.
Grr.
Yeah, I know. I'm
negative
terribly
response.
Sorry. Terribly sorry. There's just so many things going on, but you know, wonderful dance programs, and the February dance is something that's done every year. So how long have you been on campus?
I've been here for, this is my fifth year, and my appointment, I'm here for the spring semester every year, and then I have a dance company in New York, and I'm out and doing research in the field with my company and through community efforts in the dance scene, so internationally and nationally.
So tell me about your company.
My company has been around for 20 years. We tour all around the world and nationally, and I've been making dances on them, kind of I've been experimenting with dance for a long time, not necessarily with experimentation as the end result, but more to kind of question the form and see what's available in it. And that's what I've been doing with my work for many years now. And we've had pretty good success with it, happily.
So when you say experimenting, what does that mean?
I think there's a range of uses that are employed around the world and through history using dance, and some of them are more towards the entertainment arena, and some of them are more moving towards looking at kind of systemic ideologies, looking at philosophies and ways of thinking. And mine is particularly based in looking at language and dance as a parallel form to language and how it both reflects it and exits kind of linguistic analysis. And I do that by kind of detaching from narrative ideas and looking at different kinds of logics that are behind language but don't necessarily end in what could be called cohesive statement, but they're looking at more like the nature of the mind, what the mind is like before it gets pressed through language.
Are you able to describe what a typical Terry O'Connor dance looks like?
Well, actually, I think it's interesting because I use a lot of references to the history of dance, and so the surface of my work could look quite conventional, but the structural conceits in it are quite different. So I do play a little bit with the history of expectation of the viewer and what he or she is expecting to see, and that gets somewhat taken around a corner as I allow the piece to kind of open up in an organic process, not necessarily one that has clarity of story in mind at the end, but some kind of look at structures that are normally not congratulated in our society, unviable structures and ways of registering time and space that aren't necessarily largely embraced.
Can you fit your work into a particular type, sort of broad genre of dance, whether it's just sort of modern dance, jazz dance, ballet?
Yeah, I would put my work in the realm of contemporary art, firstly. It's dance, but it's dance used to be as an art form, as an artistic expression. So although I employ many of the pre-existing forms, my work is basically kind of contains a social critique that speaks more about the time it's in than the form it is, I think.
And what about the piece that's on this concert? I should say that the concerts are going to be starting Thursday night and running through Saturday. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all of them at 7:30 in the Caldwell Playhouse at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, called February Dance. And I have a note here that the program was changed in September of 2010. So if your last look at either the Krannert Center website was before that or in the published material, there's something slightly different. But I don't know what that was then, so we're not going to consider
it. I don't know what that was either. But if I could add to what you've just said, there's also a dessert and conversation gathering Friday, February the 4th at 6:30 p.m. in the Krannert Room, where we'll all be together before the show to kind of discuss the program. And it's great to have some people come out for that also.
Oh, yeah. Now, meaning you
Some of the choreographers and Jan Urquhart, the head of our department. She will also be there. And we'll all be kind of like discussing the work before
Christy
the program.
Christy Simpson, will she be there?
Christy Simpson will be there. And I'm not sure which of the other choreographers is available to be there, but probably most of them will be
there. And Christy's
there.
She's the concert director. What does that mean?
Well, the concert director kind of oversees all the kind of various elements to bring it together and make the night kind of work. She's a liaison between the Krannert and the artists and the dancers. She's kind of the overall kind of coordinator of the whole thing. We all kind of take turns doing that each year. It's a very annoying big job.
Well, that person gets to deal with all the temperaments involved, right?
Well, I don't think there's that many temperaments, but they would have to.
Well, that's unusual, isn't it?
We're a pretty harmonious group, although we do have different aesthetics, and those will all be kind of visible on this program. But I think one of the things about our dance program that's really amazing is that we embrace a really broad range of kind of dance practitioners in our program, and so they kind of a bunch of those different aesthetics will be on display for this program also.
Well, so that's one of the great appeals of these February dance concerts, or any of the dance concerts that the department puts on. So coming back to that question of your own piece for this concert called Mumblebee.
Yeah.
Choreography by you, and then music by four different folks. You've done some of the set design and others involved. So.
Mm-hmm. The work, all of my work kind of has one consideration in it all the time, which is about language, how it both exits language and how it resituates language as reference at the same time. So in this work, I was kind of thinking about a state of rumination, how people are behind what they're saying. There's another kind of voice going on that isn't quite as clear or quite as exact, but it's like a ruminating flow of ideas that somehow then get collected and are uttered. But I'm trying to stay in that pre-uttering state and look at that and the kind of logic that's behind that for people.
I'm trying to figure out, trying to imagine, what does this mean visually?
Well, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, that's a good question, because I don't really make dances that are a translation with exactitude of what I'm thinking. They don't necessarily come out as a picture of what I'm thinking. That basically the process I use incorporates these ideas, and then an effect happens on the work, and that then there is a resultant kind of imagery that happens. But it's not an imagery that's trying to depict the idea. It's born of the idea, which is different. So it doesn't look necessarily like anything different. It's just that its structures and the way it's the trajectory of its revelation over time is perhaps quite different or affected by a kind of non-causal modality.
And what's the significance of the title, Mumblebee?
Mumblebee is just kind of like a way to put people in the idea of thinking about mumbling, and obviously it's kind of got like a whimsical idea based on being a mispronunciation of bumblebee.
Right.
And it just, I think dance, for me, is a journey away from language, and whatever you're kind of thinking about when the title happens and you kind of enter the piece, that title is the portal from language into dance. And the dance is kind of like a re-estimation of whatever you've been thinking about. I also feel that dance is a kind of, it's a network that's very receptive, and it can take in people's projections onto it. It doesn't necessarily force projections on other people. It basically accepts multiple projections onto it and hopefully is porous enough to contain those people's own stories being kind of evoked through the imagery in the dance, but not finished. So the finishing of those stories comes from the viewer, his or herself.
I really love that expression you just used, porous enough to accept other people's stories.
Yeah. I think that's something about dance that can be misunderstood, because for me, I don't work from a story. It's not a form that purveys story necessarily. It's more of a form, in my application of it, that creates a system born of the moment I'm in and the thoughts I have, and I send that system out to interface with systems that people bring to it. I think it's a really very democratic form and very poetic form at the same time. It doesn't necessarily deal in nomenclature as much as people might think that it does. It's not about identifying specificities. It's about creating realms of understanding and kind of multiple points of entry.
Well, and that's one of the challenges about talking about dance.
It is.
It's sort of
like
talking about music, you know.
Yeah.
You can talk about a play because then you can read the play.
Right.
Uh-huh. But it's very difficult to describe sound, and it's maybe a little easier to describe motion, but not much. So
yeah, it is difficult. I think it's difficult, and it's not necessarily validated in our society to try to kind of honor these other ways of communicating. I don't see them necessarily at odds with each other. I think there's multiple ways of communicating. And one that I think we kind of deny ourselves to our peril is kind of the complexity of thoughts that are going on in each person's head. But the only thing we really privilege is exactitude to come out of the mouth, not the kind of anarchy of the natural state of the mind somehow. So it's somehow coming to terms with the distance between those two things.
But of course, it's the challenge of trying to do this on the radio. So as best we can do,
it's another.
At the moment, is maybe share some of the music.
Sure.
That you're choreographing. Do you start with the music, or do you start with the idea?
No, I start from nothing. I'm really interested in trying to find the musical ideas inside of the choreographic investigation. I've never made dances to music. Many people work that way. I work a different way because I kind of am looking for not only metered musical ideas, but real-time ideas about music and other kind of inventions around the allocation of time in a temporal work. So for me, I make these things and then I score it as though it were a film or something. Mm. And normally I work with a composer, but he's not available here, so I've selected some of these really amazing. Two of these, The Books is one group, and Dirty Projectors are another group. They're both from New York. They're also experimental, and again, just trying to find new sounds and actually using pre-existing sounds, both of them do, to create collages and a new kind of sound that I think is just, I'm really impressed with both of these people. They're very young people. I think they're pretty cool.
Well, we don't have the opening music that, I should ask, I'm looking at the program here, and you have them in Balayeur du Désert, is that how you say that?
Yeah.
So do they are these in order of their appearance in?
I don't know what you're looking at.
Well,
so I don't.
It says they're listed first, and the Dirty Projectors, The Books, and John Hassell.
No, because they're kind of interspersed.
Oh, okay.
It's a collage situation. So the.
Well, why don't we just, because it's what I got queued up, start with one of the Dirty Projectors
okay,
segments. This one is called Imagine It. Anything to say about what would people would see, or just let them imagine it for the moment?
I think have a listen, and then we can talk about it afterwards, okay. Maybe.
We're talking with Terry O'Connor here on Live and Local about the February dance concerts at the University of Illinois this Thursday through Saturday at the Krannert Center in Urbana on Live and Local. So we're listening to some music by the Dirty Projectors. Is this from a disc called New Attitude Rock?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this is called Imagine It. So what are you able to say about
I think I really like some of the things that the way that they steer and kind of redirect certain usages of guitar and certain rock references and certain harmonies, and they redirect them to this very, very new place, which I think is something that I am interested in doing also, using the imagery of dance history. So there's kind of a matching up there in terms of purpose.
How many dancers have you got in this piece?
There's three dancers, and I think the thing that's interesting in this work is that they're all faculty members. I decided to do a dance for the faculty members, so they are, let's not say elderly, but...
You better not. Speaking of boo hiss.
Yeah. No, they're not. They're not elderly. They're fabulous.
Experienced.
It's been a really amazing experience to work with these guys because they're my colleagues. And we wanted to kind of be in the studio together, not just in the office together and in meetings together. So this is one of the attempts to try to like be with each other in a different way. It was very amazing and special to work with these guys. So they're doing a great job because this is a difficult, very difficult dance physically and concentration-wise.
But the February dance concert includes students on the program.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Normally it's all students, actually, and there's a lot of students in this one. It's a really interesting show. There's a big range of things that are going on, including work by Cynthia Oliver, who has worked with John Jennings and Damian Duffy to create this huge projection of art made based on comic strips, and that's what her work is looking at. But the projections and the whole theatricality of it are very beautiful. I haven't really seen the work yet, actually. I'll see it tonight.
Well, and I'm looking at the program here, and it's interesting that all of the people involved have cartoon depictions in the program of their faces.
I didn't see that. I didn't see all this that you're seeing.
Yeah, it's called Closure for Blood,
yes.
Gutters for Veins, a choreo comic collaboration.
Exactly.
Cynthia Oliver's.
Yeah.
Choreography and Jason Finkelman's original music. He's
exactly.
Been on this show a number of times.
Oh yeah, oh, cool. Yeah, he's great.
Well, let's move on to a little bit of the next music. Both of these are from the books.
Yes.
Bonanza and Explanation Mark.
Yes, these are works that I think are very choreographic in the way that they recontextualize sound and language. So maybe we can listen to them, and I'll talk about that a little bit longer.
Ja, ja. Nee, nee, nee. Ook tot ziens, tot ziens. Dankjewel, kerel. Dankjewel, tot ziens. Van binnen ben ik warm. Ja, ja. Zeg, no. Jongen. Gut. Nee, toch. Jongen. Nee. Wat? Nee.
Bravo. Well, that one obviously is about language at some level.
Yeah, these all are kind of about language. And I used the big word recontextualization. I wish it wasn't such a big word, because it's a great word for dance, because I think a lot of what dance does is recontextualizes imagery of the body that's familiar and puts it in new poetic frameworks. And I think that's a lot of what the action of what choreography is about. For people, I hope people will come and check it out. It's a great, great program.
Well, and this is the opening work on the program.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Terry O'Connor's the choreographer and my guest here on Live and Local. The work is called Mumblebee, with music by these various composers or groups that we're representing, and lots of other folks involved, three dancers from the U of I faculty, and then there's the work of Cynthia Oliver we mentioned, and also one by Renee Wadley, who's a faculty member.
Amazing choreographer.
Sweetness and Danger, it's called. And then it's Carl Flink?
Carl Flink is from the University of Minnesota. He's our guest choreographer this year, and he's made a fabulous, very highly, highly physical work.
And his piece is called The Bleeding Heart, dot, dot, dot.
Yes.
For some reason or another. It's February Dance at the University of Illinois at the Krannert Center, Thursday through Saturday at 7:30. And hope you can go out to see that. For more information, go to krannertcenter.com. And so let's go out with one of the other very different bits of music on your piece, Terry, by John Hassell, called Last Night the Moon Came.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Mm. By John Hassell, that will be included in Terry O'Connor's work Mumblebee at the February Dance Programs this weekend at the Krannert Center. You're listening to Live and Local. Support for our show today is provided in part by the Blossom Basket Florist, with flowers, plants, and creations for all occasions like weddings, birthdays, anniversaries, and Valentine's Day. Two locations at Cunningham Avenue in Urbana and Village at the Crossing, Windsor and Duncan in Champaign. The Blossom Basket does deliver. And we have support from Pecara Bistro and Bakery, offering made-to-order hot and cold sandwiches, crepes, soups, and salads all day long. Pecara will make special Valentine's pastries, baklava, breads, and other treats on order. More information is available at www.pekarabakery.com. That's Pekara, P-E-K-A-R-A, hyphen, bakery.com. Coming up, conversation with Michael Luxner of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. Here's music that will be on that program by Jacques Ibert. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Michael Luxner, who is music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. And, of course, he teaches at Millikan University conducting and theory and probably other things. And they're giving their annual Young Artists Concert this Saturday at 7:30 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center on the Millikan campus in Decatur. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure.
And how long has the Young Artists Concert been going on?
I can't answer that one for you, because it was going strong when I arrived here 15 seasons ago, so at least 15 seasons.
And what's the instigation for it? I mean, I assume just to give kids
a
chance to perform.
Music schools with big student populations, we have a concerto competition. We call it the Concerto Aria competition, because about 60% of the music majors at Millikan are vocal principals, and that takes place every October, and the winners of that go on to become soloists on this concert.
And I have to say, it's always fun to listen to those folks, because you've been kind enough to ask me to judge on occasion, including this year.
That's right. So, full disclosure, you're partly responsible for
that. That's right, and I couldn't remember who had won until you sent me the program. And, these guys were awfully good. You had a nice bunch of participants this year.
Well, we always do, and it always results in a very eclectic, lively concert, because we have very strong studios at Millikan in some instruments that are, you know, not mainstream orchestral and recital instruments. The saxophone studio here is very strong, and it seems like we get a sax soloist every third or fourth year or so, and and also the percussion studio at least that often, and that always results in some new music and out of the way repertoire and a very very lively evening.
Well, I led in with the beginning of the piece that will be for saxophone, and 11 instruments is by Jacques Ibert, the concertino, concertino da camera, which just means little chamber concerto, I guess. Joshua Taliaferro, is that how he says his name?
That's how he says it.
What year is he in school?
Well, let's see. I've got all the bios right here. Josh is a senior. He's a performance major. He's been playing for 10 years, so he's got all kinds of awards. I've also had Josh, by the way, as a student in theory class, and he has an astonishing ear. In fact, people here who have heard him play since he was a freshman, whether it was just in the concert band or in one of the jazz ensembles, will remark, "My God, that guy's in tune." And that's always been one of the hallmarks of his playing, and it's a great pleasure, especially in a piece like the Ibert, which, as you mentioned, is not written for full orchestra. It's written for a small group of 11 players, five strings and six winds, and those principal players, of course, are all fully professional, so we're going to have a very, very high level, very tight and in tune performance of this piece. The piece is sometimes done with instead of just one string on a part, a small complement, but we're going with the original chamber version for this.
Since you mentioned fully professional versus student, what's the balance of the makeup of the Millikan Decatur Symphony? Since obviously the name of the group implies university, community, and then presumably professional folks.
Correct. Yeah. Well, it's either professional or student. There are no community volunteers. It is an audition. It's the curricular orchestra if you're a string student. If you are a wind student, you may be selected to play a second or third chair by the principal player, who is your teacher at Millikan. And more than half, overall the proportion's about half and half. In the wind sections, all the principals are the teachers of that instrument, and there are a few others. In the horns, say, we have a few paid players. In this particular concert, the bass, trombone, and tuba are paid. Second and third flute are not. They're students. The wind students who are selected to play, it depends on who they are, where they are in school, if they're ready, and almost on a piece-by-piece basis as determined by their studio teachers, who are the principals, both to suit the needs of the repertoire and as part of their teaching. So it's a fabulous system for both staffing and for training of orchestra playing for the top wind students. And then in the strings, all the string players who are Millikan students play. And in general, the outside player on each stand is a freelance pro, and the inside player is a Millikan student.
Yes, great mentoring that goes on there.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned the strength of the vocal choral area and the number of students that are in that area. So let's sort of sample what your vocalist is going to do. He's a tenor, Nicholas Ertzgard. Is that how he says his name?
Yeah, senior vocal performance major.
Doing
several of the operas here.
And he's doing two arias from Messiah, which people will likely find familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one from an opera by Edouard Lalo that I'm never sure how to pronounce or even what it means. Le Roi, D'YS.
Well, I think it's a location, isn't it?
I don't know.
Whatever that place is.
Here it says, the opera is set in ancient times when the legendary Breton city of Ys.
Yep. So it's the king of Ys.
The king of Ys was threatened with what was to be its eventual fate of submersion. Well, that sounds dramatic. Let's see. I'm not going to try to pronounce the French, but the character named Milio refers to jealous retainers who won't be softened, etc. And then the main part of it, Vainement ma bien ami, in vain, my beloved, do they think they can put me off. close by your shut door, I am determined to stay. And here is tenor Roberto Alagna with the Orchestra of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, conducted by Bertrand Billy, here on Live and Local, in an advance of the concert Saturday night, featuring young artists by the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center.
Puisqu'on ne peut fléchir ces jalouses gardiennes.
We heard tenor Roberto Alagna with the Orchestra of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, Bertrand de Billy, the conductor, music by Edouard Lalo from his opera The King of Ys, Le Roi d'Ys, and the aria Vainement Ma Bien Amie. And that will be sung as one of three selections by tenor Nicholas Ertzgard, who is a student at Millikan University, and he's one of five winners of the annual Concerto Aria competition. Michael Luxner is our guest in this portion of Live and Local. The Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, which he conducts, is playing its annual Young Artist Concert this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur. You have two percussionists, duo percussionists.
Right.
And you mentioned already that there's often very strong percussion students who come out for the competition. Who are these folks?
These are Cassie and Drew. We should make clear they're playing a single piece. Cassie is a senior music ed major, and Drew Merkel is a senior commercial music major. Drew is actually also a member of the percussion section of MDSO, although he's been excused from this concert in order to play his solo. And they're collaborating on the double concerto for two percussionists in orchestra. One of the percussionists' work centers around timpani and moves on to other things, and the other one works more on traditional tom-tom set, but there's a lot of auxiliary things as well. This is the third time on this piece in my 15 years, and it's a very, very exciting piece. 8 minutes, no breaks. From starts with a very fast and furious section, and then slows down, and has a lot of long-term accretive sections where you might start with one kind of a bass rhythm, like a disco almost, where you start with a repeating rhythm and then put a melody on top of it, and then put a vamp on top of that from another section, and then coloristic effects on top of that, and then it ends fast and furious again. Good piece, and also a very visual piece. Audiences love to see this work played, as percussionists often do. The choreography of getting to all the instruments is almost as interesting as the sounds they make. The final criterion for who wins this competition is simply who would you like to hear playing with an orchestra in a concert? Who will bring you to the edge of your seat? Who has that flair for performance? Who isn't just a good player or, you know, playing better than last year or a nice person, but really has that mature ability to not only execute well, but reach out into a large concert hall and grab an audience? And sometimes having left the printed music behind gives it that extra bit of edge.
Sure. Well, I'm going to save the last soloist for the end of this conversation because I want to go out with his music. So let's mention briefly, there's a new piece on the program by one of your fellow faculty members.
Yeah, Randy Raymond, or as it says in the program, Randall Raymond. But, of course, we and many of you over there know him as Randy. He's the trumpet professor here, the head of the jazz program, and a very, very prolific arranger and publisher of music. And I don't know how long he's been writing original composition or how much, but it seems that in the last few years we've been hearing more and more of his music. some chamber pieces on in recital settings, also a new work for wind ensemble that he conducted with the Millikan Wind Ensemble about a year ago. And it's great music. I mean, Randy is just a very, very fluent composer. Everything, with many modern composers, sometimes I get this a kind of sense of forced, gesture, as though you have decided I'm going to write this kind of piece, and you come up with a gesture and you fill in the content later, and it's not exactly convincing. Randy's music is completely of a piece in form and content. It comes across as effortless and as fluent, and it's engaging, and it works, and it works very well on first hearing. And that's been true of all the pieces of his that I heard. And meanwhile, we have a tradition in the MDSO of all the faculty making suggestions about what we'd like to play, because it's a teaching ensemble as well as a public performing ensemble. And at one point, we were sitting around talking about what we'd like to play next year, and Randy, this was several years ago, said, "Can we do something by someone who's alive?" And I said, "Okay, Randy," and I wrote down somebody alive. And then I thought of that as I was listening to the piece he wrote for Wind Ensemble, and I said, "You know that piece we're going to do by someone who's alive? I think it should be you." And he said, "Oh no." And he said, I said, "Oh yeah." And then I didn't hear much more about it. And then around last spring, he said, "Well, I got a piece," and it's called Icarus, and it's hard to describe because it's brand new. It has small motives, mostly comprising pentatonic cells that are bitonal, set against each other, either in alternation or on top of each other, against long, broad melodies that, in the end, suggested to Randy the idea of flight. And so he called it Icarus, after the Greek myth of Icarus, who flew and got a little too close to the sun, and in the end, the wax that was holding the feathers to his arms, which was allowing him to fly, melted away, and he plunged into the sea. In fact, I think it's the sea he plunged into is still called the Icarus Sea. And those little programmatic details are part of the piece, but that's really not what the piece is about. The piece is just a lovely and engaging and unselfconscious exercise for orchestra.
And we're going to go out with just a little bit of the Concerto for Clarinet by jazz clarinetist Artie Shaw. And this will be played on your concert by the fourth of the young artists who are on the program, John Gorecki. Is that how he says his name?
Yep. Wonderful, wonderful kid, great player, great jazz sax player. He does everything at Millikan, plays wind ensemble, plays orchestra. In fact, he's playing second clarinet and E-flat clarinet in the Miraculous Mandarin after he gets done with his concerto, because he's about the only student we have who can play it. And as I say, he's a great jazz player, and this piece has his name all over it. It's really not a concerto in any formal sense. It's basically a big band blues chart with strings, and it's called a concerto. I mean, it's got saxophones and set drum and everything, and the clarinet solo lines, although they sound improvised, are written down.
And I remember his performance at the competition, and he did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
And, so thanks, Michael. Sounds like an exciting concert with lots of variety on it. Hopefully folks will go out to hear it Saturday night, 7:30. If you want to get tickets or more information, you can go to their web address. It's millikan.edu/Kirkland, or you can phone the box office, area 217-424-6318, or just show up at the door on Saturday night. Thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
And here's clarinetist John Brussier, who is of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, with the DePaul University Jazz Ensemble 1, led by Robert Lark, the opening of Artie Shaw's clarinet concerto on Live and Local.